Blog Talk Radio.
The Trump administration passed its tax bill without a single Democratic vote in either House of Congress, proving that elections have consequences. So do the votes in Virginia, but there are no Virginian voters. Let me try that again. So do tie votes in Virginia, but there are no Virginian voters in Thailand. Can we talk about how the GOP's next plan is also a bad idea? The Security Council of the United Nations passed a resolution blocking fuel, ships, and workers from North Korea. The United States, this is before there was a UN, did something very similar to Japan in late 1941. Anybody here know the word in Korean for Pearl Harbor? Also, have you ever seen pictures of Kim Jong-un of North Korea and President Trump next to each other? Do you suppose we could get them to set up a diplomatic meeting with one another at Supercuts? This one is hard to believe, but a Trump appointee was caught lying. Yeah, I know. That's right. His ambassador to the Netherlands, also known as Holland or Nederland, was asked whether he still believed that there were no-go zones in that country, that is, places that were not safe for people to go. He told the reporter that he had never said there were such places. The reporter then played a video clip in which he had clearly said that there were. Bitcoin today lost 45% of its price. I almost said value, as contrasted with yesterday. The password is bubble. Next year, there's going to be a medical trial of a contraceptive gel for men. Apparently, the guy is supposed to rub it on. Yes, that's right, over there. And that's supposed to prevent pregnancy. The one thing that wasn't reported on in the story is whether it's supposed to work because it's a spermicide, or because by rubbing on with increasing and decreasing speed, all the action occurs without the act that's necessary to cause pregnancy. Ain't science grand? And finally, a credible newspaper has reported that a young man from Cuba arrived in Miami to have doctors remove a 10-pound tumor from his face. I'm not kidding, 10 pounds. His father spoke to reporters and said the tumor, I can't. It may have been a rumor, but now it's a tumor. Anyway, the tumor started out as a pimple when the kid hit puberty and now has grown quickly to the size of a heavy basketball. The good news is that the doctors can remove it and that the tumor is not cancerous. The bad news is that without the tumors being removed, it could continue to grow and could fracture his neck and cause suffocation. Also, he has to stop eating chocolate. The doctors are confident about the surgery's success. They say it should be, of course, a slam dunk. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. Tonight we'll talk about those stories and the unintended consequences of the tax bill that just passed and how the growth assumptions that the Republicans have been espousing are, to put it gently, crazy. We're going to do all of that and discuss these stories. Tonight, we have no guest. It's just me, and to the extent you wish to call in, you, and we'll give out the phone number in just a minute or two. But first, I wanted to call a couple of things to your attention. One is just some basic housekeeping. Next week, we will not be doing a show. It is the week between Christmas and New Year's, and I strongly, by the way, believe in New Year's. But during that week, we would be unable to get a guest, and nobody would be listening anyway, which would be about three fewer people than tonight. But because of that, we don't do a show between Christmas and New Year's. But we will be back on January 5th, and we will have a return of Larry Hancock, the author who we had on last week, and he's going to talk about another one of his books, maybe more than one, specifically. We're going to talk about the Martin Luther King killing, about which he wrote a book or co-wrote a book. And if you think you know everything about the Martin Luther King assassination, you really should tune in and disabuse yourself of that notion. That's 2 weeks from tonight, January 5th. I say 2 weeks from tonight. This is assuming you're listening live or know when we're doing the broadcast. Today is December 22nd, the second day of winter. although if you go outside in most places, it feels like winter's been going on for a while. It's been very chilly here in Arizona, as an example, again, for here, compared to places like Chicago, New York, and so on. It's very mild. It would be spring or maybe early summer. But our high today was in the 60s. Yesterday it was in the 50s, and for here that's pretty chilly. And when I say Arizona, in this case, I'm referring to the Phoenix metro area. In any event, the other things I wanted to call to your attention are, first, if you would like to help support the program, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/Jeff Bushman, one word. There you can just throw a few shekels our way. We don't have regular commercials on this program at this point, and listener support is how we get along. So if you would like to do that, it would be greatly appreciated. Again, that's patreon.com/Jeff Bushman. And finally, I wanted to let you know, we've mentioned it in the past, but now I'll be specific. If you go to Amazon.com and look up Mobile Millionaire, Mobile, M-O-B-I-L-E, Millionaire spelled the usual way, you will find one of our books, and you can check out our other books as well. That's an e-book. It's, if I recall, it's about $1.99 or $2.99. It's an e-book. You can read it on your phone, your tablet, your computer. I suppose you could probably project it with an opaque projector, but the book talks about how to invest in mobile homes, and with any luck, make some money, because it's cheaper to get in, and it's cheaper to fix, and can get you into the real estate market where otherwise it might be difficult depending on where you are. That's it for our commercials for now. Let me talk to you a little bit about the news. By the way, it's always difficult to anticipate how long the program is going to last, because unless we have a guest, in which case it's kind of self-controlling. But tonight I'm not sure we're going to go the full hour, which would probably be a blessing for those of you who are listening if we don't. Let me talk about a couple of things here. We're going to talk about the plans that the Republicans, and specifically the CAV, in terms of their next big legislative activity, the beginning of the year, when they return from the holiday break, the break they're all taking now for Kwanzaa. The thing they're talking about doing is infrastructure improvement. That is the rebuilding and repair of roads, bridges, ports, all of that stuff, which would generally be a good idea. When we start talking about the tax bill, we'll also talk about why this may not be the best time to do infrastructure improvement, even though generally it's a wonderful idea, and Lord knows we certainly need it in this country. We talked in the intro about the additional sanctions that the Security Council is imposing on North Korea. We can all agree North Korea is an outlaw government, or is governed by an outlaw government, and that Kim Jong-un having nuclear weapons available or rockets to deliver anything is a terrible idea. But prior to the United States being involved in World War II, which for us began on December 7, 1941, when the then government of Japan bombed Pearl Harbor and some other locations, and they did for a couple of days. I think they bombed Singapore and Guam. They did all kinds of tough stuff, very obviously. Tough stuff is a gross understatement, clearly. But they did that in part because just prior to that, because of their other activities, the United States had imposed sanctions on them, which prevented them from getting oil. Japan has no oil domestically, so they have to import everything. When we created that blockade and prevented them from getting oil, I'm not saying they had no choice. One of the things they could have done is just said, okay, we're not going to do any of these things anymore like we're doing in China and the rest of the Asian area, and thereby get the sanctions removed. But if they weren't going to do that, and they obviously chose not to, the only choice was to attack the United States so that they could, through war, have access to oil and hopefully get the blockade taken off because we would be too busy elsewhere. And it worked in terms of that purpose. It didn't work in terms of totally devastating the United States military, but that's at least arguably because they just didn't go far enough. in their surprise attack on December 7th. My concern, expressed in the intro, is that by cutting off all of this opportunity, or not opportunity, all the economic inputs that they have in North Korea, we may be doing the same thing to them as part of the UN that the United States did to Japan. And the concern, obviously, is that may help foster an attack by that rogue government against us. Let's see what else we were talking about. We were talking about a member of the Trump administration lying. How is that possible? Hard to believe, isn't it? Also, Bitcoin. Bitcoin, for the few people who don't know, is what's called a, I shouldn't say that because those who don't know may be made to feel inferior in some way, and I don't mean it that way. I'm not that knowledgeable about Bitcoin myself, but I do know it is a what they call a cryptocurrency. That is not a real currency, but a currency that is basically subject to market forces and high levels of speculation. The price for Bitcoin on one day, I think, may have reached $15,000 per Bitcoin. And to be honest, I'm not sure of that. But it has no backing, but of course, neither does the dollar, except that it is the dollar, the ability to exchange dollars in the United States is guaranteed by the U.S. government. And Bitcoin's guarantee, and Bitcoin's exchange rate is anything but guaranteed, and its exchangeability is anything but guaranteed. But people were buying them, buying Bitcoin left and right for a long time, but specifically over the last month or two, the value has kept climbing and climbing and climbing. I know somebody who invested a little money in it, and I think is still making money. A friend of a friend of mine invested it and has lost a good deal of money. But that's the nature of speculation, which is what investing in Bitcoin is. And so when I corrected myself and said it lost 45% of its price rather than 45% of its value, it's because I'm not altogether sure Bitcoin has a value. Okay, enough of that. And we talked about all of that. Let me get into this discussion about the tax bill and infrastructure improvement. excuse me. The United States economy is the largest in the world, although China is becoming almost daily a closer and closer second. Largest economy, and then I think after that is probably Western Europe, the Eurozone. But when Obama became president, excuse me, when he was elected in 08 and became president early 09, the country, as almost everybody who's listening to this knows, was, the exception, by the way, is my dog, but the country was in a major recession, the worst recession we've had since the Great Depression of the 1930s. There's at least one modern economist who believes that the recession we experienced was in many ways worse than the Great Depression. But that argument aside, the recession was serious, and the way it was overcome is because the government spent a lot of money. The Federal Reserve ended up putting a lot of money into the economy by the purchase of United States bonds and other debt instruments. By so doing, the process was called quantitative easing. Essentially, the quantitative referred to the quantity of money that was being put into the economy. When there's more money in the economy, more people have more money to spend and therefore buy products that generate jobs. And that's what they did. And the combination of what Congress and the president did on the one hand and what the Federal Reserve Board did on the other took us out of the recession. There's an argument by some conservative economists that the only thing that ever got us out of the Great Depression was World War II. And liberal economists then say, no, that's not true. The Depression was ending as a result of New Deal programs prior to the war. And this is one of those weird situations where everybody's right and everybody's wrong, pretty much. The Depression, the Great Depression, did end, or was in the process of ending. The economy was getting better and better as we were leading up to World War II. And the war certainly knocked the Depression on its butt. And the reason for that is not because war is good for economies. Sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. But the reason is because what occurred with the onset of the war was the same thing that was going on before the war, but it was on steroids. And what that was is that the government spent humongous amounts of money and borrowed large amounts of money and put that money that was borrowed into the economy. That was done to some degree before the war. And once the war started, in terms of paying soldiers, in terms of buying equipment and weapons and all that stuff, all that extra money poured into the economy. And that's the way you cure economic slumps. You put more money into the economy, people have more money, they buy more stuff, more widgets is the old expression, and people then get jobs building those widgets, and they then have money to spend in the economy and so forth. Okay, good. That's how recessions are ended. You have the government borrow and spend more money. Arguably, that's the creation of money. People talk about the government printing money. The government doesn't print more money to end recessions or to do a variety of other things. That's effectively what they do. They don't literally print it. They borrow it and spend it. Okay, and you know, they. And by the way, when the so-called Great Recession was on and Obama and Congress were trying to spend more money so as to end the recession as quickly as possible, there were a lot of complaints that people made about some of the programs that the government was spending money on. They said, this is nonsense, it's wasted, it's a foolish program, whatever it was. And they may have been right, but it didn't matter, it wouldn't matter. The thing is, what you're trying to do is spend money to put it into the economy. The fact that you may think that the bridge to nowhere is a stupid idea, you might be right, you are right. There's no might about it. You're right. It's a stupid way to spend money. But the goal is to spend the money, not to specifically build the bridge. And as long as money goes into the economy, realistically, it doesn't much matter what you're putting it into, because that people will have more money and so on. Okay. Now, we have to talk about what happens when you have there's three stages of an economy. We need to talk about what happens when you have a good economy and when you have an inflationary, try that word again, inflationary economy. This may get into the weeds a little bit, and I'm sorry if it's boring you, but we are coming to a point about all this, so if you'll stick with us, we'll get there. In a good economy, which we've had for several years, and it's not Trump's doing, he hasn't done anything to hurt it yet, but he hasn't done anything really that has the effect of helping it either. You can talk about how he got rid of certain regulations and so on and so on. That's a minimal effect, if any. And economies don't go up and down. Very few presidents in our history have had much of an effect on the economy. Okay, people talk about how things were so great under Clinton and so terrible under, name somebody, Harding. That's not true. The economy is good under Harding, but somebody else, name somebody else. And all of that may be true in terms of the timing that it occurred during their administration. But, sorry, Bill, Bill Clinton didn't have that much to do with a good economy. That had a lot to do with Silicon Valley. And he didn't hurt it, but he didn't do anything really to help it. Likewise, same thing with Trump. And you can argue that Hoover had a major effect because he did some things when the Depression was on with the intention of improving the economy, and he did exactly the wrong, he and Congress did exactly the wrong thing. And you can talk about Roosevelt having a beneficial effect with the New Deal and Obama having a beneficial effect with the very large spending to get us out of the Great Recession. But other than that, I mean, you look back at George W. Bush, maybe at the end of his administration he didn't do that great in terms of solving the problem, although he did do some good things in terms of the economy. The war in Iraq and certain other things he did, the 9/11, the post-9/11 legislation to make us less democratic, all of that, fine, that was terrible. But in terms of getting the economy out of the recession, he started some things that were continued by Obama, and they were good things. He did the right stuff, he and his Treasury Secretary. Arguably, he messed it up prior to that, but that's a different issue. Likewise, Reagan and Bush didn't do any harm and didn't do very much good. And same with Carter and Reagan. I mean, you can go on and on and on. all those people may have had good or bad economies, but they didn't really have much to do with it because the president doesn't control all of the levers of the economy. So you can't blame people who were president because there was a recession during their administration as a rule, and you can't credit presidents who were in office when the economy was good. We tend to do that, but it's just frankly inaccurate. Okay, so let's talk about the tax bill that was just passed. We all know about the $1.5 trillion of additional debt over the next 10 years. Okay, but there are certain things that occur. In a good economy, what the government should be doing, when the economy is rolling along, when unemployment rates are low, and people are therefore, more people are working, and things are moving along, what the government should be doing, that's the Fed, Federal Reserve Board, and Congress and the President, what they should do is keep their hands to themselves. Because you may be able to do some harm if you interfere with what's going on in the economy. You don't want to add a whole lot of money for reasons we'll talk about in a minute, and you don't want to take money out. That's in a good economy. That's like the Goldilocks economy, which we're presently experiencing. The other side of that is, what happens when there's an inflationary economy? Keep going up, and wages and savings keep being worth less day by day or week by week. What the government should be doing, when the economy is doing bad, let's go back two steps. When the economy is doing badly, besides government spending, they should also be cutting taxes. That sounds counterintuitive, but it isn't. If you cut taxes and spend money, you're going to be adding money to the economy again so people can buy stuff and create jobs. That's what you do in a recession. In a booming economy, you stay the hell out of the way. Okay? In an inflationary economy, you do the opposite of what you do during a recession. You raise some things. And now, what's inflation? Inflation, the classical definition, is too much money in search of too few goods. Okay, but what happens on a day-to-day basis is you go to the store to buy something, and what cost you a buck and a half yesterday is now a buck 75. And what was, you know, and it goes on and on. Price increases go through the economy. You can have increases in wages, but most of the time, the increase in wages is not enough to keep up with the inflationary pressures. That happened during the Carter and Ford administrations to some degree. Again, neither of them were at fault, but that's what occurred in the economy. During inflation, and we now have the typical home mortgage right now is 4%. At one point in the Carter administration, if you wanted a home mortgage, you could get one, but the interest rate you would be paying was 22%. 22% a year in interest on your mortgage. That's pretty darn expensive. Just to give you a quick, I can't figure out the payments while we're on the air. There are mortgage calculators that will do that. But if you look at the difference between 4% and 22%, it is a significant difference, not just in terms of the percentage, but in terms of dollars out of your pocket. So what do you do during an inflationary economy? The reason that interest rates ran to 23% is because the Federal Reserve Board was trying to take money out of the economy, right step, during inflation, so that people would have less money to spend. The effect of that would be, and also, by the way, the government cut back to some degree during those years on government spending because of the inflation rate. When you have inflation of 10%, 11% a year, that's pretty serious stuff. So what they did was they did those two things, raise taxes and lower government spending, so that there would be less money in the economy. Again, if you picture the economy as a bowl, you'll understand conceptually what that is. You take some money out of the bowl, and now there's less money to spend, so if somebody wants to buy a widget, instead of continuing to increase in price, since there's less money to buy widgets, fewer people have money, therefore there's less demand, supply-demand. When there's less demand, the price goes down. That's what happened. Also, wages didn't increase. During the inflationary periods that we have from time to time, like I said, wages go up, but it's not going up fast enough to keep up with the pace of increasing prices. So as consumers, you fall further and workers, you fall further and further behind. Okay. Well, what causes inflation? We talked about that a minute ago an allusion to the fact that it's too much money in search of too few goods. So what happens when the government over 10 years, now keep in mind what they're spending is a different question in terms of the tax reduction. But what is unquestioned is they're adding a bunch of money every year into the economy. There's a couple of problems with that, but just talk about that. When you add money to an already booming economy, you have more people with more money trying to buy more goods, and you then get into a situation where there is literally too much money in search of too few goods. For a while, it doesn't have any real effect, because if the economy is not working at full capacity, then to buy Nintendos or widgets or Apple phones, the iPhone, then people will continue to buy those things, and what will happen is the factories will just build more of them. But you get to a point when the factories are at full capacity. Let's say we're talking about iPhones, and let's assume right now that they sell 100,000 iPhones a year. I have no idea what the real number is. Now, you get all this money into the economy as a result of the tax cut. Corporations are spending more money. Individuals are spending more money. And now you get to a point where they are producing the maximum that their factories can produce. That may be a million. Let's say that's a million iPhones in a year. What happens after they're at capacity, but you still have more people who want them? Well, simply put, the price goes up. Now, that's the classical model. The truth is, in a real everyday economy, the price starts going up before they're at capacity, because they realize since so many people want them, the demand is so high that the price starts going up. But certainly when they get to manufacturing capacity of any product, then, or any type of product, the price will go up as long as there's still demand. How do you cut demand? You take money out of the bowl. You take money out of the economy. And sometimes, if the price goes up high enough, you have other things that happen, like instead of buying the iPhone, I may buy an Android. Okay, but again, that's very much a side issue, which excites economists, but is boring to the rest of us. And for those of you who are asleep, please wake up. Okay, so that's what happens. As you get it, with all of this money going to be pouring into the economy, at some point you're going to have some level of inflation. It's pretty serious. But the other end of it, when they say that cutting taxes and putting more money into the economy is going to increase jobs, our unemployment rate is right around, I shouldn't say under, the truth is I don't know, but it's right around 4%. To most economists, that represents the goal of full employment, because a lot of that unemployment is very transitory. If I got fired from my job or quit my job last Thursday, I'm unemployed if they take the statistical analysis on Friday. But by Monday, I may have another job, or probably will have another job, in which case I'm no longer unemployed. And when the unemployment rate is this low, much of that number is going to be transitory. Now, I understand that there are a lot of people who, when the unemployment rate was low under Obama, they said that wasn't a real number. The real number was something like double that or triple, you know, whatever the reported number was about one third to one half of the actual number. That may be true, by the way, but it's always true. And that has to do with the fact that there are people who have stopped looking, who are now out of the employment seeking group, and therefore not technically unemployed the way the government reports those numbers, regardless of who's president. Okay, so what happens is, now with all this extra money pouring in, you're going to have more people getting jobs, and you're going to have a situation where the wage growth that hasn't happened in this recovery is going to start happening, because after you hire as many people as you can, and you need to hire, if you do need to hire more people, they're just not available unless you do one thing, if you're an employer, and that is increase the wages of your workers. Okay, so if you increase the wages of your workers, you will attract more people, but that's fine. But the next thing that will happen is everybody else is going to be doing the same thing. So you have too many employer dollars in search of too few people to hire. That increases wages, but the only way they can cover those costs is by raising their prices, and that, again, leads to inflation. Now, the Federal Reserve Board raised interest rates twice recently, and the reason was because they had a target in mind that a rate of 2% inflation was a good thing, and frankly, it is. But when you have this fairly uncontrolled additions into the economy, what's going to happen is what I was just talking about, which is wages go up, but inflation goes up too, because all these people have all this extra money because of their raises, and they're going to go buy the iPhones, the Android phones, the widgets, the knitting needles, whatever it is. They're going to be, there's going to be a lot more demand, and therefore the prices will go up, which is great if you have a high-paying job, but if you have a relatively low-paying job, even in that superheated economy, you are really hurting. The people who get hurt the worst during high levels of inflation, principally the poor. But there are other people who are hurt too. By the way, there's somebody who's helped. I'll tell you who that is in a minute. But the people who are really hurt in that situation are the poor, because their wages are not by reason of lack of education or less education or socioeconomic status. It comes from generations of poverty. Even if they're working, they're not making as much as they would with more education and more positive work experience. And therefore, when the price of milk and bread go up, prices, I should say, of milk and bread go up, they're hurting more. So inflation is not terrible for the well-off. It is moderately bad for the middle class, but it's terrible for the poor, which means more government spending there in order to bring them up, unless they cut back more programs, which Paul Ryan and his Republican henchmen want to do. Okay. The other thing, and this goes on. First off, the thing about the tax bill, one of the stupid things about the tax cuts they did, and I have mixed feelings about the corporate tax cuts, and one of those views would disagree with many of you who are listening, and I won't go into that now. But one of the things about it that's stupid is that a number of Republicans, no reputable nonpartisan economist, a number of Republican politicians have said, well, it's not really going to cost us $1.5 trillion over the 10 years because this tax cut is going to cause so much growth that there'll be more revenues into the government. And the result of that is that there will be no additional deficit or debt. The problem with that is it assumes 4% annual growth in the economy, 4% growth in the gross domestic product. Problem? Yeah. Anybody here able to name a 10-year period during which the average annual growth rate was 4%? Not too darn likely. You might want to – I'm not sure that it's true, but the one possibility I can think of is in the immediate post-war period. But I don't think we reached those growth rates for 10 years running. That's what they're saying is going to happen here. And frankly, it's so unrealistic as to be ridiculous. The 2% average growth rate, sometimes 2.5, is a really good, sustainable rate of growth and will not be inflationary and seems will grow, including the middle class. That's good. When you're talking about a 4% annual growth rate, my opinion and that of people who do that for a living say that's insane. It's not sustainable. If you had 4% annual growth, you would also, again, tend to lead to inflation, but it's not realistic to think that's possible. Okay. Now they're talking about infrastructure improvements. Again, great idea, and a particularly great idea during a recession. Why? By the way, that was done during the Roosevelt administration during the Depression. The Works Progress Administration, the WPA, the conservatives who lived through that or who've read history, even now, they still hate the WPA, even though it's been out of business since 1945, at the very latest. It may have been before that. It put people to work, right? Building roads, building a lot of the libraries and courthouses you see around the country. If you ever look at the engraving in the stone of those municipal buildings, you'll see it was built in the 1930s by the WPA, the Works Progress Administration. This was a New Deal agency of the Roosevelt administration, again approved by Congress, that put people to work making what we now call infrastructure improvements. All good, because there was a depression on. You wanted more people working, again, putting more money in the bowl, right? But now we have 4% unemployment. They've just spent a lot of money, or will be spending a lot of money, putting it into the economy when we don't need it. And now you're talking about infrastructure improvements. We certainly need the roads and bridges, highways, buildings improved, bridges, if I didn't say that right. We need those improved. We have potholes all over this country. In the East, it's worse than it is in our part of the country in the West. But it's horrible. So we really do need those improvements. But doing it now, what you end up doing is the following, very similar to what we talked about before. You have a lot of money in the bowl. You have people competing for employees. What happened when the last big boom occurred is places like McDonald's ended up paying humongous amounts for workers relative to what they normally pay because they couldn't get workers because they could get jobs elsewhere. Well, you have that same thing with the infrastructure improvements. If, let's say, the city of Boston or the state of Massachusetts is going to start building or improving roads and bridges, they're going to have to hire workers. Well, if everybody essentially, if everybody's already working, the only way you get workers is by stealing them from somebody else, not literally grabbing them, but by offering sufficiently high wages that they come over to you. If they're coming to you from McDonald's or from a construction company, then those employers are going to have to get more employees, and the only way they do that is by raising prices. Everybody's prices go up, voila, inflation. So that's the problem. It's not a problem of is infrastructure improvement a good idea or not. It's the timing. They may say it's the economy stupid. It's the timing stupid. What you do when is a big deal. So the general rules, to repeat it, is during a recession, you spend more money and you cut taxes. You satisfy everybody, the liberals and the conservatives. During a good time, normal, you know, where you have unemployment rates as low as we have now, the economy is humming along, everything's fine, don't do anything. Keep the hell out. Just let things move in their own, progressing as the business cycle. When you have inflation and you have an overheating of the economy, you raise taxes and you lower government spending. This is classic Keynesian economics, and it's not theory, folks. It works. That's what you do. That's how you control a massive economy like ours. Determine what you're going to do in terms of government spending. Determine what you're going to do in terms of taxes. That's not social legislation. That's economic control and improving the lives of the humans in the country. Before we go on, let me repeat to you that 2 weeks from tonight, Larry Hancock will be joining us talking about the Martin Luther King assassination and all kinds of interesting stuff. And I expect we'll probably talk a little bit about, since he has an interest in it and has written a book on it, we'll probably be talking about UFOs and the Air Force and what's been coming out over the last couple of weeks. Additionally, I'd like to re-mention Patreon.com. It's Patreon.com/Jeff Bushman. If you'd like to support the show, that's where you can have an opportunity to do that. Right now, let me give you the phone numbers. If anyone is still listening and would like to talk about what we were talking about or anything else going on in government and politics, your number to call in is 646-668-2953. And if you want to call in, this would be a good time to do it because I'm not sure how long the show is going to go on. I don't know if you can hear it, but my voice is giving out. That's what happens when you have a trained voice. Anyway, repeating that, it's 646-668-2953. By the way, I also wanted to mention one of the two other books I have up on Amazon, which is called Bobby's Been Shot. It's a mystery novel. If you like that sort of thing, I happen to think it's not bad. And you can judge that for yourself by reading parts of the book on the Amazon site without having to pay for it. That's Bobby's Been Shot at Amazon.com, and you can look it up under that title or look it up under my name. It would probably be under Jefferson, my full first name, Bushman. Okay, that covers that. We pretty much, I think, covered the whole thing we were going to talk about with regard to the government and tax policy and inflation, all of that. So we covered a pretty broad turf during the 40 minutes we have spent together. I thank you for that. And we're going to end the show now. I hope you found that interesting. I understand that people start talking about the economy. Something comes into place that news people, journalists, call MEGO, M-E-G-O, which stands for My Eyes Glaze Over. And I hope your eyes didn't glaze over too much. Again, thank you for joining us. I would like to invite you to join us, not next week. We'll be off on December 29th, but we'll be back on January 5th with Larry, whom I mentioned a moment ago. And Again, thank you. Be kind to each other. And though we're leaving now, and it's only, it's 7:40 where we are, therefore 9:40 in the east, but someplace it's around midnight. And if you're listening to us in podcast version, we do go live almost every Friday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. Thank you again, and good night.